content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with a couple of short articles from AARP, the magazine, and it's under the heading of Real People. So let's start with this one about three men, a lost dog, and a happy ending. On an ordinary subterranean expedition, Gary Keane came along across an extraordinary find, a dog in need of rescue. Gary Keane, last August, I was with a group of 11 people in the second longest cave in Missouri. Rick Haley, I had stayed on the surface in case of any problems below. Keane, about 20 minutes in, I heard the kids up ahead call, "Hey, there's a dog." She was so weak, all she could do was lift her head. Jeff Bonhart. Abby is a 14-year-old poodle hound mix. One night in June, our other dog came home without her. We looked all over for Abby, but it was like she had vanished. Haley. Jerry came out of the cave and called the assistant fire chief. He put out the word that a dog had been found, and we entered the cave. Keane. We had to crawl forward on our bellies, then backward, then descend a corkscrew formation with a 40-foot drop in order to reach her. Haley. Abby was skin and bones, but she sat up. I had brought a leash, but she wouldn't come with us. That's when I took out a duffel bag, and she stepped in. She knew we were there to help her. Keane. We zipped to where her head was sticking out. Then we gingerly passed her back and forth as we made our way out of the cave. Haley. The sunlight must have been blinding for her. It didn't seem like she could see much, but when she saw Jeff, she walked over to him. Bonhart. I picked her up. She was feather light. She normally weighs 45 or 50 pounds, and she was down to about 20. She's a survivor. I know she must have suffered down there in that cave alone, though. I wonder, God, what's the purpose in this? Maybe it's this story. It gives people hope, you know? And this was as told to Leslie Quander Wooldridge. AARP member Jerry Keane, 59, a financial advisor with Prudential, lives in Sedgwickville, Missouri. Rick Haley, 67, a teacher at Missouri School for the Blind, lives in St. Charles, Missouri. And Jeff Bonnert, 55, a firefighter, lives in Perryville, Missouri, with his family, two cats, and two dogs. Now let's look at My Nana Was a Force of Nature. Chef and farmer Matthew Rayford honors his heritage and his expertise. Our land has been in my family since 1874. 40-plus acres in Georgia. My children are the seventh generation to have planted, harvested, and eaten from a crop off this land. And there's an eighth generation. We raise our own chickens, and we grow potatoes, peppers, arugula, and more. We feel very fortunate, very blessed that we're able to carry on this legacy. There are so many people that can't do that. When I was 18, I left home and swore I would never come back to the South. I joined the Army for 10 years. Then I went to culinary school to study French cuisine and became an executive chef in Washington, D.C. As my parents and grandparents were getting older, though, less and less of the farm was being cultivated. Every time I would go home to visit, my Nana would ask my sister and me, "What are we going to do with all this land?" In 2010, for some reason, I told her, "We should go back to farming it." My Nana asked, "Did you say we, baby?" I said, "Yes, ma'am, I did." And she said, "Great, get started." She gifted my sister, Althea, and me 12 acres of land, and we've been at the farm ever since. Nana didn't stop growing her almost quarter-acre garden until she was nearly 90. When she passed away at 96, she was still helping us out at the farm. That woman was a force of nature. Her name was Ophelia. Like many of my relatives, she was a wonderful cook, and one of her signature dishes was her egg pie, a recipe I've adapted. She'd whip the eggs, sauté up all the vegetables, slide the pan into the oven, and less than 30 minutes later, breakfast would be ready. One slice has all the nutrients that you need to get through the morning, and all of it is fresh and unprocessed, which is what the body needs. It's also a beautiful dish to serve to guests, especially during the holidays when you forget about breakfast until you realize, oh, dang, we got to cook for everybody. This is one of those fast and furious dishes. It comes together quickly. When I was little and Nana served egg pie for breakfast, I would go back immediately for seconds. But now I'm adult, so I have to adult. I have to eat my piece and say, okay, I've got to get back to work. And this was as told to Leslie Quander Wooldridge. Matthew Rayford, 55, is the author of Bresen Niam, Gula Geechee Recipes from a sixth-generation farmer. He lives with his wife, Chef Tia Rayford, in Brunswick, Georgia. And the last one in this series, in this magazine, I Conquered the Mighty Mississippi twice. How Dale Sanders paddled America's most iconic waterway at 87. Back in 2015, at age 80, I paddled the full length of the Mississippi River from the source in Minnesota to the Gulf of Mexico. There's a pretty active community of river paddlers online, and they hadn't heard of anyone that age ever making the trip. So I claimed a record as the oldest. But then a certain Stan Stark waited until he was 81 and he beat my record. That's all right for him, but this year I decided to try again at 87. On my birthday in June, I started the canoe journey of 2,400 miles with two friends. This time down the river, it was a little harder because I am that much older. Also, the river seemed to have changed. The air was hotter, the water was lower and slower moving, and headwinds became the norm. We were helped tremendously by 100 or so river angels, the people who live along the banks of the Mississippi and give food, water, and camping space to people who paddle through. I paddled about 9 hours a day and averaged about 4 miles per hour. The water was moving that slowly, but I didn't mind the speed because it gave me time to think. My career was in parks and recreation, and I still love an outdoor challenge. For 5 years, I also claimed the record for oldest person to hike the whole Appalachian Trail, until someone beat it this year. I have a mission in this life, to inspire others to connect with the natural world. When someone says, "I am walking because of you," it means a lot to me. I want to give people hope. Do you remember a time when you smelled something, and for a split second that smell brought you back to a much earlier time? Well, sometimes when I'm out on the water or hiking a trail, I can have a feeling like that. But it lasts for 30 or 40 minutes. It's a kind of euphoria. I feel at peace with the whole cosmos. It's because of those times that I know there is a superior being. There is absolutely more to it than us. The older I get, the harder it is to push myself. But it's important to do so because we need to feed our body and mind. You may not be able to take off and float down the Mississippi, but anyone can get out into nature and just be. When you do that, even for a little while, the rewards can be overwhelming. On September 8th, our expedition reached salt water, and I won back my record. My wife, our kids, and all my grandchildren were there to meet me. It was wonderful. As for Stan Stark, it's a friendly competition between us. I'm hoping that when he gets past 88, he'll be able to challenge my record, and that I'm around to see it. And this was told to Beth Levine. Adventurer Dale Graybeard Sanders, 87, lives in Bartlett, Tennessee. Now let's take a look at AARP, the bulletin, and the article under the heading of Your Money, How to Buy Your Own Health Insurance. If Medicare isn't an option, you have other choices. Some 3.4 million Americans over age 55 left the labor force during the pandemic, according to Goldman Sachs research from November 2021. Many of those workers have something in common, a sudden need for health insurance. The stakes are high. Health care needs can be substantial at this age, and many workers have a spouse and children on their plans. It's no surprise that roughly 1 in 4 Americans age 50 to 64, too young for Medicare, regard health care costs as a major financial burden, according to recent West Health Gallup survey. If you have a spouse with access to employer-provided health insurance, your best solution is usually to join that policy. Otherwise, the market beckons. One bright spot, Affordable Care Act, ACA, plans have gotten more affordable for many people. Should you be too young for Medicare and not have an employer-sponsored plan, you can sign up for, here are some of the alternatives. COBRA. If you've had health insurance through your employer and you quit, get fired, or are laid off, you may qualify for 18 more months of coverage through the 1985 law known as COBRA. The law, which applies to businesses with 20 or more employees and to state and local government, guarantees continued coverage. Under COBRA, however, you have to pay the full monthly premium, both your contribution and any share that your employer may have paid. This can be a lot. COBRA coverage is often cost prohibitive to many people, says Howard M. Zimmerman, an independent insurance agent with Marketplace Insurance Agency in Boynton Beach, Florida. If you use COBRA, however, you don't have to pay a premium up front. In normal times, you can wait up to 60 days after your employee coverage expires to sign up for COBRA and then wait up to 45 days more to start paying a premium. Your COBRA coverage will be considered effective the day after your employee coverage expired. Currently, as long as COVID-related employee benefit relief remains in effect, you have even more time to sign up and pay, at least a year. But if you need coverage for care, you'll have to pay premiums going back to when you lost your employee coverage. It may be several months' premiums at once. Next, we have the Affordable Care Act. Last year, 7 million people over 45 signed up for ACA insurance during its open enrollment period, up from 6 million the previous year, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation. ACA insurers are required to cover pre-existing medical conditions and to provide several types of preventive care for free, including vaccinations. ACA insurers also have to provide coverage for participants' dependent children up to age 26. Another appeal of ACA plans, lower premiums for many people with limited incomes. Households with income up to four times the federal poverty level, which the government sets annually and which varies by household size, qualify for premium discounts. Bigger discounts, introduced in 2021 in response to COVID, are now available through 2025. And households with incomes above the income cutoff, $69,680 for a two-person household in the contiguous United States in 2022, may qualify for discounts too, depending on their income and local insurance prices. To view your ACA options and sign up, start at the government's healthcare.gov website. While you can buy an individual plan directly from an insurer or work with a licensed agent in your state, going through healthcare.gov has its advantages. You have to buy through the ACA or state-run marketplaces in order to receive any discount or subsidy you're due. And you're guaranteed that any plan you buy through the marketplace meets certain important standards. A non-ACA plan might be cheaper, but also have skimpier coverage. Open enrollment for 2023 ACA plans runs from November 1st through January 15th, with a December 15th deadline for coverage beginning on New Year's Day. You can also sign up within 60 days of what's known as a qualifying life event, such as losing other health care coverage or moving to a new location. To see the discounts you might qualify for, check out kff.org/interactive/subsidy-calculator. Then there's Medicaid. Since 2014, Medicaid, the federal health insurance program for low-income Americans, has become more widely available to people under 65. Each state now has the option to offer Medicaid to adults with incomes of up to 138% of the poverty level, currently putting the Medicaid income cutoff at about $18,750 for a single person in the contiguous 48 states, and $25,250 for a couple. Previously, Medicaid was typically not available to people under 65 unless they were disabled adults or adults with minor children. Now, following implementation by Missouri and Oklahoma in 2021, expanded Medicaid is available in 38 states and the District of Columbia. If your state has expanded Medicaid, which may even include dental coverage, you can use KFF's subsidy calculator to see if you qualify, and you can sign up for Medicaid throughout the year at healthcare.gov. And then we have catastrophic coverage. As the name indicates, catastrophic health insurance is designed to cover big expenses, not most routine care. Deadlines are high, generally from $7,000 to $10,000, Zimmerman says. Once you've spent the deductible amount on qualifying expenses, all of your necessary medical care should be paid for. This makes the most sense for people who are relatively healthy and just want coverage in case something major happens, like a hospitalization, that could wipe out their savings, he adds. Catastrophic coverage is available from private insurers directly or through the ACA marketplace. To get personalized advice, look for a licensed independent agent who represents several insurance carriers. One place to start is at healthcare.gov/find-assistance. And finally, community health centers. If you don't qualify for Medicaid, you can't afford a health plan, you can get low-cost primary care through community health centers. Located throughout the U.S., they get most of their funding from Medicaid and grants from the federal government and other public and private sources. Expect to pay fees on a sliding scale based on your income. To find a location, enter your zip code at findahealthcenter.hrsa.gov. This article was marred by Margie Zabel Fisher. She writes about personal finance and business for the New York Times, Business Insider, and other media outlets. Now, also from AARP The Bulletin, let's look at a little chat, a question and answer with Cameron Crowe. Be a warrior for your greatest dreams. Cameron Crowe, director of Almost Famous and Jerry Maguire, and writer of the Broadway show Almost Famous the Musical, talks with former Rolling Stone music editor Ben Fong Torres, who discovered 15-year-old Crowe's writing talent. How did you fall in love with music writing? I fell in love with music in San Diego, living in a little basement apartment. I would go get records from this record store in Pacific Beach. I would listen and get lost in the music. But I knew that I was not a guitarist or a musician. The bar was so high, I felt like writing was an avenue that made sense to me. We first published you in the Rolling Stone 5 decades ago. Now you're 65. Looking back, what are the main lessons you have learned? I've learned to listen to the little voice inside that says, you can do it. You can send your stories to this guy who is just a glowing byline, and he'll read your stories. It is still the lesson of follow your instincts, follow your heart. I think everything I've done has been some version of that story. Be a warrior for your greatest dreams and intentions. You seem to have mastered the art of being forever young. What's the role of rock and roll in staying so young? Well, youth is spirit, and it's also curiosity. Great music to me takes you to that place where you can appreciate something that feels timeless. I think this is one of the gifts of music. It lasts beyond your own lifetime. It inspires new generations, and it takes you to a place where you can just feel the potential of being alive. How else are you staying not only young at heart, but also a body? I walk a lot, and directing, I just run to the next setup and to the next opportunity to create something. When you have the most spirit in a room, you transcend age, and you actually bring a kind of sparkle. Tell me about rock star Greg Allman, taking your interview tapes and almost ending your career before it started. Yes, Greg Allman took my tapes, and I was completely worried that I had blown my first big assignment. This was in Almost Famous. I just collapsed in the airport thinking everything was lost, and you were going to fire me from ever being in Rolling Stone again. Then I ran into my sister, and she rescued me. It totally happened. Greg Allman did return the tapes, and I wrote the story. How did the idea of Almost Famous the musical come about? Almost Famous wasn't a commercial juggernaut. People took it to heart over time. If we could create the feeling in the theater where people can feel immersed in 1973 and what it was like then to see a concert and to meet these indelible characters, well, that's worth taking the next step to try it. In Almost Famous, your mentor, the Lester Bangs character, said, "Don't make friends with celebrities." Did the real Cameron Crowe ignore that advice? Well, I married Nancy Wilson of the band Heart. I feel really good about that. Mostly, I think I've always been interested in the front row seat of how people that I admire create their stuff and what their process is like. Sometimes, by becoming friendly, it's been helpful. I haven't felt like it has destroyed my journalistic ability or intention. Who are your influences as a director? I was lucky enough to spend some time with legendary Hollywood director Billy Wilder around the time Jerry Maguire came out. I just knocked on his office door and created a relationship with him. He's my favorite because he's always about the characters. He would have a wonderful plot that was always lively and exciting, but mostly you came away wishing you didn't have to say goodbye to those characters. You've won an Academy Award and other major accolades. What about failures? They always exist. If you ask for the gift of a long career, you're going to crash into some walls sometimes. The key is to keep going. In Almost Famous, the Lester Bangs character tells you that rock stars make you feel cool, and you are not cool. After all this time, do you feel cool? I will never feel cool. And finally, why is that? Once you feel cool, you're not cool. Ben Fong Torres, the former music editor at Rolling Stones magazine, is the subject of the documentary Like a Rolling Stone, The Life and Times of Ben Fong Torres, streaming on Netflix. Now let's look at events can help vets navigate VA. Volunteers offer help for military families. U.S. Army veteran Greg Love of Charlotte tried for years to get access to the disability benefits he is owed after serving as a military police officer from 1987 to 1994. but he found the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs system slow and hard to navigate. His first application was denied. Then earlier this year, Love, 54, met with a VA claims representative at an event called Veterans Benefits Live, offered by the department along with AARP North Carolina. He got help reapplying for benefits and is optimistic about his chances now. It opened that door, says Love, who incurred a spinal injury from being hit by a vehicle while working on an Army base in Georgia. I finally got to apply for the benefits my family and I deserve and need. I'm just waiting and hoping that this time will be different. AARP's efforts include not only helping to sort through VA benefits for health and disability, but giving support for other programs that aid military families, with a focus on thwarting fraud targeted at veterans. For those who can't attend live events, AARP provides an online tool, the AARP Veterans and Military Families Health Benefits Navigator, to help with enrolling in the VA system. Find the tool at aarp.org/VetsHealthNavigator. Last year, the AARP North Carolina Veterans Military, Their Families Advisory Council's efforts contributed to Governor Roy Cooper's proclaiming the state veteran-friendly. Now the council is challenging the state to live up to that proclamation by, among other things, making sure military cemeteries are maintained, checking on the quality of North Carolina's 5 nursing homes for veterans, and pushing the state to create job, educational, and housing opportunities for them. About 46% of North Carolina veterans are 65 and older, and another 35% are between 45 and 64, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. We want to recognize their service to our country and the sacrifices they've made, said retired Army Colonel Shirley Guerrier, 72, of Wilmington, who chairs the VMF Council and is the lead volunteer for AARP North Carolina's veterans issues. AARP also wants to help vets avoid fraud, since they are often the targets of con artists. AARP North Carolina holds in-person and virtual events on how to spot, prevent, and report scams. To reach veterans in rural areas, AARP volunteers conducted a telephone campaign this year to share information about fraud with them. AARP is also involved with events that honor veterans and recognize their service, hosting coffee gatherings for them and sending cards to those in nursing homes. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.